360's The Week That Was, the most listened to hour in Territory Radio. The Territory leaders break down this week's big issues.
And of course, we are coming to you live this morning for the Food Bank Christmas Hamper Appeal. It is on again, and we're calling on the local community to support Territorians in need throughout the month of November. We're here just in the Mitchell Centre, just outside of Coles, for a wonderful cause. And it is Friday morning. It is time for The Week That Was, proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions. Joining me this morning, Kezia Purick, the member for Goyder. Get that microphone, Kezia.
Yeah, I better pick up the microphone. And I've got to say a quick hello to my brother Peregrine, who's in Darwin.
Oh,
he's listening.
God.
I told him to tune in. He's probably on the back veranda.
And we've got Eva Lawler, of course, the Minister for Infrastructure Planning, Logistics, plenty of other things.
Good morning.
Great to have you here this morning. And we've got Gerard Maley, who is, of course, the Deputy Opposition Leader. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie, and good morning, listeners.
And Matt Cunningham from Sky News. How are you, mate?
Well, one of us on the right side of the Berrimaline here anyway, Wolfie.
Yeah, all the other bushies this morning. Always good. Now, there's a lot to cover off this morning, and we might go firstly to this story from late yesterday. We know that a 31-year-old man has been arrested following a six-hour standoff in Darwin City. It comes after police attempted to arrest the man at the Luma Luma Holiday Apartments around 11 yesterday morning. Now, the man attempted to flee, jumping from balconies before becoming stuck on a first-floor alcove. A police officer was injured when the alleged offender threw a bottle at his head. A cherry picker was used to eventually arrest the man just after 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Never good to see this type of thing happening.
No, not good at all. And thankfully, no one was seriously hurt or fell, broke bones. But it sort of indicates the serious problems we've still got within our society. You know, whether the fellow or the couple have got, you know, difficulties or traumas or, you know, and what brings it on, you know, is it that, you know, and I'm not saying this particular case is the situation, but sometimes you see people who are high on drugs and then do harm, and then perhaps because they're under stress, they go to drugs and vice versa. But hopefully, you know, once all the legal stuff and the court stuff sorted out, that, you know, this fellow and his partner can get some serious help to, you know, either go their own ways or whatever, or stay together as a couple. But, you know, good on the police for, you know, getting it calmed down quickly.
Absolutely.
You know, hopefully so this kind of stuff doesn't get repeated. But sadly, it's associated with COVID, because we all know that put a lot of strain and stress on people, individuals, as well as couples and families.
Yep.
So let's hope it all gets sorted out happily in some way.
Obviously this matter will be before the court, so I won't comment, but just to say well done to our police, and it's great to see that was managed quickly.
Yeah, it seems that it's an issue of crime here, where these police done a wonderful job, but it seems that people are losing respect to the police and injuring a police officer. You know, that's just unacceptable to me. They're out there protecting us day in, day out, and they really need the resources to make sure that they're protected. And it just shows that crime's out of control, and these people are losing respect to the police. And if the police do or say something, they should be respected.
Yes, well, I wouldn't say crime's out of control at all, Jared.
And the Alice Springs people
but
say it is.
Jared, let's just remember that you spent your years as a lawyer getting these people, keeping these people out of jail. So, you know, I don't think really there needs to be those comments from you. You, as I said, you're the lawyers that defended
lawyers are just doing their job. They enforce the law, and the police have got to do the right thing. What I'm talking about is the lack of respect that the police have gotten, and the crime is just allowing these people to have no respect. The police should say something. They should be obeyed and listened to. That's why they protect us. They do a wonderful job, and they need to be protected.
Did you, as a lawyer, respect the DPP? Did you respect
of course,
the police?
Of course I did. If you're trying say that I'm a disrespectful lawyer, I take offence to that. I did my job as a lawyer, and that's what everyone does. Like, you're a politician, and I really take offence if you say I'm a disrespectful lawyer.
Well, look, I tell you, we are going to talk a little bit more about some of the issues that we have got with crime a little later this morning, because I do want to talk about Alice Springs in a little bit. But I do want to take you across to the situation out at Howard Springs. Now, we know that the Northern Territory has recorded 4 new COVID-19 cases in the 24 hours since 11 a.m. yesterday, or that was probably the day before. All cases are linked to the repatriated Australians who are now under mandatory quarantine at the Centre for the National Resilience in Howard Springs. Now, Matt, I know you've been out there. You're out there yesterday, covering it quite extensively. I guess we all sort of thought that this was probably on the cards, bringing Aussies home, and that is why they're out there at Howard Springs, obviously under the care and supervision of the AusMat team and the National Critical Care and Trauma Response Centre.
Yeah, and they do an amazing job, Len Notaras's team, and they have since the beginning of this pandemic. I was out at Christmas Island at the beginning, and they did a magnificent job out there, and they've been doing a great job here at Howard Springs as well. I think we will see more cases come from these flights. Interesting that we've got five cases now from aboard the one flight that came from New Delhi on Tuesday. And I would suspect that if there were five people on that plane, at least two were positive at the time that the plane was flying, we're going to probably see more and more from that flight who will have tested positive to coronavirus. Now, that in itself is not a big issue. What is an issue is making sure that those people are contained within quarantine and that the virus doesn't escape that area. Jared's a local member there, and I'm sure that a lot of the people, a lot of the residents around there would have their concerns. I know they did at the beginning of this crisis. I think one thing we've got to look at is that, you know, private security's been the big issue in Victoria, and we know that there have been those issues with private security who then allowed people out of hotel quarantine, and that's how the virus got out, and we saw that second wave in Victoria. Now, I know it's a lot more difficult for people to get out of that Howard Springs facility, but we are using private security there at Howard Springs. There's private security guards at the front. I just wonder whether there's been any offer made from the federal government for the use of army personnel, ADF personnel, as there was in Victoria, and whether we need to think about whether we have ADF or AFP guarding the Howard Springs quarantine facility as opposed to private security.
Because I'm really concerned about the behaviour in Howard Springs. There's been a rave party. There's been people trying to escape out of the facility. So it really goes to show that that the control of the facility may not be where it should be.
Yeah, I mean, again, Jared, very un-territorian, very un-Australian. Absolutely, it's a fantastic opportunity for territorians to pay back, to be part of Australia, to be
We're talking about keeping territorians safe and not letting the virus out of the quarantine facility.
And also, we're talking about respect previously, absolute, utmost respect for national trauma, the people who work there, Professor Len Notaras. These people are on their game, and we'll make sure that territorians stay safe.
I mean, just going back to Matt's point
I mean, I was going to pick up on that, is that, okay, so one person has tried to get out of the complex. Well, you know, that's understandable, given that there's, you know, probably a couple of thousand in there at the moment. I'm not sure of the numbers. But the one thing that the NT government has been able to do, and, you know, the hazmat teams and the security people, is to learn from all the other states. Now, whilst there might be security people out at the complex, and that's good, I'm quite sure that they are going to be exceptionally well trained, you know, not only trained in their security skills and knowledge and discipline, but also in dealing with people who are obviously clearly going to be under stress. Now, the whole complex, as we know, because we've all had briefings, you know, is partitioned off with sterile corridors and things of that nature. I think what the hazmat team and the NT government and all those other agencies that are engaged with that complex is have to be very mindful, and they are, because I've had a briefing with Len Notaras, is they're very mindful of people's mental health and social well-being, and I'm sure they're addressing that, you know, as we speak. And I'm with Eva. You know, this is part of what, you know, being in this country is all about. You know, these are Australians. You know, they're not some other country, you know, from the South Americas or the Europes or something. These are Aussies, regardless of their ancestry, that we're trying to bring home. There's 38,000 of them still wanting to come home.
And that's something that we hear on the phone lines, definitely. People are very supportive of Australians coming home, very supportive of us repatriating those Aussies back.
And why wouldn't we? And the CLP is definitely very supportive. This is about protecting Australians. We're all here. They protected us and looked after Cyclone Tracy and other various natural disasters. So we're here to look after them. But I'm just worried about the behaviour inside the Senate.
Yeah, I want to go back, though, to Matt's point as well about whether we do need the AFP or whether we do need that further assistance. I guess, you know, just going on past experience, and obviously we have learned lessons from what's happened in Victoria, there's no doubt about that, but the real concern here is that we've got a very vulnerable community if somehow we did end up in a situation where COVID got into the community, and that's obviously the real concern. Nobody thought it was going to happen in Victoria or anywhere else, and I'm certainly not trying to scaremonger or anything, but I do wonder, Eva, have we had sort of an offer from the federal government for the AFP or anybody else to support us?
So there's still the AFP in the Northern Territory, and there will be, and there is police, Northern Territory police out at Howard Springs. So, you know, Jared's trying to, I don't know, scaremonger. He's trying to do the usual CLP job. But, you know,
I'm trying to keep territorians safe.
People,
that's what I'm trying to do.
But disrespectful to people like Professor Len Notaras, to the people in health who are not stupid.
It's not about any of those people.
Absolutely, they have worked. work
the
on
people
that.
who are maintaining the security of that facility. And at the moment, the people, so I've been out there a couple of times this week, and the people maintaining the security are private security guards. And the issue in Victoria has been with private security guards. Now,
but
these private
security guards
may have been far better trained than the ones in Victoria. I don't know, but I'm just curious as to whether there's been any offer from the federal government for the ADF or the AFP to fulfil that role, given the issues that we've seen in Victoria.
Yeah. Well, as I said, there's a territory police out there. I'm assured that they're, the situation is absolutely totally under control, that they've, you know, learnt from other states. They're not silly about that.
And the other thing too is, despite being Jared's electorate, I do know that both the schools, Howard Springs Primary School and the Good Shepherd, are kept briefed regularly by the government authorities, and that the council and, you know, the bulk of the people who associate with those schools are comfortable at this point in time.
And you know what? If Jared doesn't want Howard Springs in his electorate, I'm more than happy to have my electoral boundaries. I can assure you that it's, this has put Howard Springs on the map. And Kezia and I were both
Proposing that they be moved to Quest in Palmerston either?
I'm talking about extending our border, extending my electoral border to include Howard Springs. Kezia and I were both evacuated after Cyclone Tracy.
And
I was 12 years old. Absolutely forever grateful for others.
Matt, it feels like it's a who's the biggest territorian competition this morning.
No, I'm afraid to I wasn't even alive in Cyclone Tracy.
You were just a puppy.
Those things shape your memories. They shape who you are. And as I said, we'll always put the hand out to other Australians to make sure that we're here when we're needed.
Well, and I've got to say, although there are disagreements on this panel, it is wonderful to have three very, you know, born and bred territorians on the show, Maddie and I aren't born and bred, unfortunately, but we're adopted, I think you'd say, and we've got territorian children.
You're a queen.
You've got three, I've got two, so you know, you don't get more territory than that. You are listening to Mix 104.9. It is the week that was, and we are coming to you this morning from the Mitchell Centre, and we're just outside of Coles for the Food Bank Christmas Hamper Appeal. It's on again, and we're calling on the local community to support territorians in need throughout November.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
And we're coming to you live this morning for the Food Bank Christmas Hamper Appeal. It's on again, and we're calling on you guys, the local community, to support territorians in need throughout the month of November. We are here outside the Mitchell Centre this morning. Mitchell Centre, outside Coles is what I think I mean.
I'm watching that bottle shop's going to open soon.
Oh, look out, Kezia. A bit early for a champagne, isn't it? Now, there's been plenty happening throughout the week, but we did catch up with Dr. Robert Parker from the AMA, the President of the Australian Medical Association here in the Northern Territory, earlier in the week. He is urging the government not to allow travel from metropolitan Melbourne to the Northern Territory until there has been no reported community transmission for 2 weeks. Now, as we know, the Northern Territory is set to open the borders with regional Victoria from Monday. We are still getting, you know, quite a few people get in contact with us at the station to say that they're a bit concerned about that. And then, of course, Dr. Parker also said that he did think that, you know, maybe what we need to do is have a situation like there is in New South Wales and also Queensland, where you actually have to fill in paperwork or the QR code when you go into a different location for more than 15 minutes. So I did it when I was in Cairns recently. You literally just scan this little code when you go into somewhere, say, to have something to eat. And it would just add that extra layer, I guess, of protection for us in the territory as we open up to more and more states.
It may well be something that happens in the near future in the territory as well as elsewhere around the country. I think in theory I don't have an issue with it because if it assists in speeding up tracing, if we do have a community case, I would be concerned about paperwork because that's an extra impost on the restaurateur or the publican or whatever, and difficult to manage. You know, like, does that mean they have to have a person there to monitor it? Because, you know, as some pubs or a lot of the pubs have different entrances, so, and you can't rely on people to literally fill in a form all the time. I have no issue with it in theory, but don't put an extra impost and cost on the restaurateur. And like, if the queue code is something that can be done quickly and expeditiously, that might be the way to go.
I noticed some when I was in South Australia recently that what a lot of the places there are doing is they're just asking you when you go in, do you have the COVID Save app? And you have to show that you've got the COVID Save app downloaded, and then once you've got the COVID Safe app, then you can go in, no worries.
Right.
Does I presume that
I presume that was the idea of the COVID Safe app in the first place. I mean, we spent $5 million bucks on it.
Went a bit rogue, didn't it?
Well, we may as well use it for something.
That's right. Yeah. Well, and that's the whole thing. And I guess we caught up with Hospitality NT as well yesterday. Alex Bruce. I was going to call him Dr. Alex Bruce. I won't give him that title. Alex Bruce. And he'd said that the hospitality industry doesn't have an issue with it, but he had also said, you know, it shouldn't just be the hospitality industry. It should be any location if you're there for longer than 15 minutes.
Or for a gathering, like during the election campaign, I can't remember where it was. It was a couple of places in the rural area, meetings and things of that nature. There was a form, and they, you were just asked to put your name and your, a phone number, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I think that's fine. Like, if you're having a big function that's for business purposes, then, yes, you can easily track that.
Or, I think from a tracing point of view, though, doing it in a digital way is going to be better. The AFLNT is doing it at the footy. You scan the Q code before you go in.
So. And don't they have those wristbands down at the final somewhere?
Oh, maybe. I'm not sure. But I do sort of think to myself, I reckon here in the Territory we've become sort of, we feel so far removed, I guess you'd say, from what other states are experiencing, that I do wonder whether it's worth us erring on the side of caution without impinging on people.
Because we have to be careful, because the consequences are really severe. If we get a second wave, we really haven't had a first wave yet, and we get a second wave in the Territory, it's going to make a massive impact on our society and our way of life. So I agree with Kezia. And in theory, I think it's a good idea. We need to make sure that there's no extra burden on the business, because businesses are doing it tough now, and if they've got to employ more people to do this, it's going to cost them more money, and they are struggling. There's no question that the economy is bad and that businesses are doing it tough. And we need to balance the protecting Territorians and also allowing business to operate.
Well, I think this comes back to perhaps, you know, the major parties like the CLP and the government somehow having discussions with the medical people. So make it an all-of-community approach. Just don't, as one of you said, don't single out the restaurateurs or the hospitality industry. Make it all-of-community such we all embrace it and we'll all take it with us.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter which side we're on. We all want to make sure Territorians are safe. There's no question about that.
Yeah, and so we've seen the QR codes being used for conferences, for functions. I went to the Civil Contractors Awards night. We had the same thing. Yeah. So, and I think we'll see that if the vaccine is so far off, that there will be more things evolve, more things put in place, and I know our government's very happy to do that. But I will take up Jared again. He's starting to sound a bit like Leah, just negative, 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 and I really don't want 4 years.
I'm here supporting the Territorians. I want to support Territorians and keep them safe. I'm not sure how you can say that is negative.
It is, because, you know, there are plenty of businesses that are doing very, very well. We are the comeback capital, and, you know, Jared, I don't know where you go, but, you know, around the place, the restaurants are full. I tried to get into some restaurants in the waterfront the other day, absolutely packed. There are over 150,000 visitors in the Territory. Our cafes, our restaurants, our pubs have been open for so long, and there are plenty of people around. I'm talking to tradies as well. They've never seen it better. If you look at the car regos in the Territory, we're up to CE. I'm a person who likes numbers. We move from CC to CD to CE. Have a look around. There are so many new cars in the Territory. So there are plenty of people who are doing very, very well in the Territory, Jared. So stop talking it down. Don't spend 4 years complaining about the Nation Report.
Where do we rate in our economy? We're last, again.
Well,
six out of the eight factors in the last 4 years.
I want to go back to the comments, though, that were made by the AMA president, because I think in this instance, you know, we can sort of say that Jared's talking, you know, you can say that Jared's talking the Territory down, but we actually had the AMA president come on the show yesterday and say that he was really surprised that the Chief Minister had attacked the AMA, and also he said that the AMA and AMSANT are in lockstep and they're standing up for people that they represent. He said he thought that the Chief Minister's outburst towards him at a press conference earlier in the week actually demonstrated an anxiousness from the government about their decisions. I wasn't at that press conference, Matt. I'm not sure whether you were or not, but I was quite surprised
to see that. I was at that press conference, and I've got to say, it sort of came from nowhere, that response. He was asked a pretty straightforward, non-confrontational question by a reporter just about what the AMA had said about concerns about the border opening to regional Victoria, and it was almost like a premeditated attack that came. It was framed as a defence of the chief health officer, and that, you know, he was saying, you know, the chief minister was saying that he was sick of people second guessing the chief health officer, and, you know, yada yada yada. But I'm not sure that was what was going on there. But it certainly Michael Gunner gave it to the AMA with both barrels.
Well, so the AMA did actually say, Robert Parker said to me yesterday on air, he said that he has got the utmost respect for the work that the chief health officer is doing, and I actually think that it's really important to point that out, because you know, it's not a situation here where he's having a crack at the chief health officer.
I'm quite sure, absolutely positive, he wouldn't have done that. And let's not forget, as you said, Mr. Parker is representing the membership of that organisation, and they are the people that are going to bear the brunt if we get the virus into our community. They are the clinicians, they are the medical people, the hospital and nurses, and we know what it's done to that workforce in the other states, if not around the world. So I always think it's inappropriate to be critical of any representative who is at the front with all the membership behind, whether it be an industry group or a professional body like the AMA or the Law Society, and particularly publicly when the AMA probably is doing what they are meant to be doing. And, you know, I'm with Matt, and I find it extraordinary when you come out and attack things like that,
Yeah, but don't forget that Hugh Heggie and also the Department of Health, they're talking literally daily, if not hourly, with their counterparts across Australia. They have all the complete picture, all the information in front of them. So I think Michael was concerned that that there was some undermining of the decisions of the chief medical officer. And so he was being very firm about that, that the chief medical officer, as I said, has the full picture, the most up-to-date information. And so, you know, and he has done very, very well, Hugh Heggie.
Yeah, absolutely. He's done a good job.
The proof is in the pudding. So, you know, that's where we need to...
He's a household name now.
Well, what I can't work out, though, Eva, is if they're all taking the same advice at a national level, why are we ending up with a different outcome in every state and territory?
So because the advice, though, is around your particular and your specific areas and what the cases you have.
So is the advice saying Western Australia should keep its borders closed but Queensland should open them?
I think the election's saying that, isn't it, Matt?
In both places.
I think Western Australia have got, what are they, 1.2 billion in the black? They can afford to do whatever they like, WA.
So it's economics, not health concerns that's driving this decision.
I think it is economics in WA, just to digress for 1 minute. They have a state election in March next year. And by all accounts, if the state starts to struggle, you know, in other industries, their mining industry is what they're protecting, because that's going gangbusters over there. And they've got an election in March next year. And I reckon you're going to see those WA borders stay closed. They might ease the restrictions a little bit, because my brothers clearly can go home.
Yeah.
Well, they've told us they're going home.
Go home to quarantine.
They can go home to their quarantine. They don't have to go to a hotel. Yeah. So obviously there's issues that, you know, they're releasing some things, but there is politics in it, so let's not kid ourselves. Same as with Queensland.
Absolutely. Well, only here. I mean, the lines from the government changed almost overnight once the election was won. No. I mean, before the election, we were talking about hard border measures for 18 months.
That's right.
And then, you know, now we're looking like we're going to be open to the entire country by November.
But that's the situation is changing down south. But WA, as I said, it is the advice of the chief medical officer, but then it is nuanced towards your state. So WA has... as I said, a mining industry, they have people that are, you know, that can FIFO in and out. So obviously, they've got a huge industry. They need to protect that. And so that's why they make those nuanced decisions around their own state.
Just to give you an example of how ridiculous it is at the moment, though, Wolfie, I know people at the moment who are in the Northern Territory. They live in country New South Wales.
Yep.
And they are in the Northern Territory without quarantining for 2 weeks so that they can get to Queensland.
Yes,
right?
Correct.
You know,
it's unbelievable.
Exactly. I mean, it is the level of politics at a state level has wrecked this whole thing. You know, this whole national cabinet approach we had at the beginning that was unified and everyone was on the same page has just completely fallen apart.
Because I actually thought it was bloody wonderful to see all of our leaders on a state and federal scale working together. Like, we'd never seen it before. And it was actually quite, you know, like as an Aussie, you looked at it and went, wow, when it really matters, we work together.
I
but then
agree
it fell
that.
Apart.
And I would say...
And politics seemed to slip in the middle and now we've got, like Matt saying, it's different all over the place.
That's true. But I would also say that apart from a couple of hiccups during an election campaign, that Michael Gunner has probably been the standout as far as maintaining that national cabinet
That's
sort
right.
of position.
He's maintained that good relationship with ScoMo, which I think is great. It's great for Territorians, and it's what we need. Eva and I were actually talking about this off-air a little bit earlier this morning as well. And it's not just sort of the Chief Minister, I don't think. It's all of those. It's all of our ministers at the moment working with their federal counterparts. And again, it's the best for Territorians. It really is a good thing.
Absolutely. And that has been one of the real positives out of that. So you are having fortnightly teleconferences or, you know, team meetings and things like that with your federal counterparts and sharing ideas around what's working. So whether it's the planning ministers that I meet with or the environment minister, the energy minister. So that's the positive thing, is around having those regular conversations.
Well, we've got a few text messages here. I just want to read one of them out. And Eva, it is, Katie, can you please ask the minister how many respirators are available for Territorians, actual numbers?
Oh, look, I'd have to get that on notice. So I will chase my friend Natasha Files, who's down in Canberra, pushing again and working with the federal government around Kakadu. So my portfolios obviously are infrastructure, the environment, and also renewables. So I'm not in the SEMSI, so I don't attend those meetings, and so I can provide that information.
Thank you. We would appreciate it.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
Well, you are listening to Mix 104.9, and it is The Week That Was, proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions. And we're down here at the Mitchell Centre for the Food Bank Christmas Hamper Appeal. Now, throughout the week, we actually caught up with the Police Minister, Nicole Manison. It was confirmed that for Alice Springs, because this is a topic that we've spoken about on numerous occasions on The Week That Was, for Alice Springs, they are going to keep Task Force Viper down there on the ground. Now, some astounding figures, I think you'd have to say, that she also revealed on the show throughout the week. She said that since October 13, so we're talking about 2 weeks, I guess, there had been 59 prosecutions files put together by the police, and 41 of those were youths. We know that there's been some real issues, obviously, in Alice. I'm pleased to hear, I think, for the town that that Task Force Viper has been set up. It's going to stay there for as long as required, by the sound of things. But I guess it does highlight the fact, or to me, those figures sort of highlighted to me that there are some real issues, you know, in the Red Centre. And I guess that no matter how you look at it, a lot of people listening would be thinking to themselves, somehow the system is letting us down.
It sounds like it's a structural failure within the town. Now, what do I mean by that? There's no respect for the authorities. There's no respect for people and properties. The services, call them what you like, youth services of some description, are obviously struggling, and I think something's got to give, and it's obviously already broken, you know, with the incident with the hit and run and the subsequent passing of that gentleman, and I think the Chief Minister, or perhaps the Police Minister, you know, have they actually been to Alice Springs? You know, have they actually addressed and spoken with the people on the ground? Because there's a particular Facebook page, Alice 2020 or something like that, and they regularly put up the updates of what's happening, and you just think, you poor bastards, you know. And these, it used to be, I mean, I lived in Alice in the 80s, and it used to be certain areas, you know, there's a little bit of trouble once in a while, as you get in communities.
Outside Malanka's after a night out sometimes for me.
Or that other place in the mall, I can't remember what it's called, Bojangles, that's right. But I think there's a combination of things now in our community that we didn't have when we were young, and that's drugs and alcohol. You know, previously, I think when we were younger, you just have the alcohol, the blokes have a good punch up, and then they'd go home and, you know, sleep it off and be sore and sorry for themselves. But now you've got the introduction of drugs of various descriptions. Even with these young people, they're still getting access to drugs somehow. You know, they thieve, they get money, and it's a structural failure that they've got more so than any other community in the territory, and that has to be addressed.
Let's not forget, Labor's been in control now for 4 years. This is their fifth year, and it's getting worse. So Labor have lost control of the climate in Alice Springs, and the people tell me, my members from Alice Springs, say it's just out of control. It's dangerous to walk the streets.
Yeah, well, again, Jared, I actually was working in Alice Springs from 2010 till 2013. I also know that during the CLP time, when you actually had...
We're talking about the last
Chief
4 years
Minister
here. Labor have lost control of crime in Alice Springs.
The Chief Minister, actually, who was from Alice Springs, the issues around crime were still there. And then, Jared, again, your background as a lawyer, you understand how complex these issues are in Alice Springs. And I think I spoke last time I was on this show. Alice Springs is the place that attracts people from the APY land, so South Australians coming to Alice Springs, people from the other side of WA as well. It is a difficult and complex place as well. So, yeah, Jared, you know, this is exactly right.
The Labor had control for the last 4.5 years, and it's getting worse.
Now, it's exactly right. This is what's happening, is when you put the police in, you put an operation in, so we're seeing then the results of that. That's how it works.
I think one thing we really need to consider about what's happening at the moment, and Scott McConnell, former Labor MLA, kicked out of the party, but anyway, he warned about this when this first happened, right, is the issue with the extra COVID money. So
yes. Yep.
People are getting, you know, job seeker was doubled, job keeper was 1500, but job seeker was doubled. So the dole was effectively doubled. Plus people were able to access their superannuation up to $20,000. You've seen that money flow in. People have that money then in their bank account. And so then they go into Alice Springs in search of alcohol. I think that's probably been the number one factor that's driving what we're seeing there at the moment.
Immediate cash into the economy.
And that's exactly what I was saying. So from people from far and wide, and you know, whether it's Mount Isa or the wider areas, who may have stayed in their communities, are coming into Alice Springs. And when they're coming into Alice Springs, it is about socialising, it is about alcohol, it is about all of those things. But as you said, the police have done what they need to do, and as I say, all respect for the police, and that's what needs
to be. The other thing is, earlier in the week, we caught up with Tourism and from Tourism Central Australia, and they did actually make the point that, you know, the issue, for example, on Friday last week, when there was two female tourists who were, I believe, inside their vehicle, they were then indecently assaulted by a group of youths. You know, the worry is, and the real concern is that we obviously want to keep all Territorians safe. There is no doubt about that. But we also want to make sure that when visitors come to the Northern Territory, no matter whether it's Alice Springs, whether it's up here in Darwin, wherever it is, that they feel safe. Because I think the biggest thing is, if people don't feel safe, and if they go
home
they won't
come.
And tell people that something like that has happened, they won't come. You know, no matter how much marketing we do or what we do. And you know, for me, I think every one of us, we've all spoken about how much we love the Northern Territory this morning. We have to make sure that we do everything we can to keep this place, you know, the wonderful, vibrant place that it is.
Well, and it will spread, you know, good and bad words spread around the countryside pretty quickly these days with social media and things of that nature. But I still think, like, Alice is at the crossroads of serious trouble. Pretty town, pretty central Australia, as we all know, is a beautiful landscape. And it's not just the police. The police are only addressing the problems. They're not sort of preventing the problems from happening. And that's part of government's role and the agencies that government funds to prevent the problems. Now, those women or a couple in that van, that should never have happened, never. But the attitude of these young people is anything and everything is fair game. You've got it, I want it, I'm going to take it.
Now, the crime's definitely spreading across the territory. Well, I've had people in my electorate, in McMinns Lagoon, ring up saying that the crime is spreading, there's been property offences in McMinns Lagoon.
Well,
so
actually,
crime is out of control.
Well, can I just actually tell you about
Jared.
A rock-throwing incident that occurred last night? I have just been given this detail. A man's been injured after confronting a group of youths who allegedly threw rocks at his car. No, in Darwin. The incident happened on Bradshaw Terrace in Casuarina about 6 o'clock last night. A group of up to seven youths allegedly threw rocks at the vehicle, smashing the windscreen. The man approached the youths when he was allegedly attacked with a scooter. He sustained injuries to his collarbone and hand, requiring treatment at Royal Darwin Hospital. Police have identified several of the youths on CCTV, but at this stage no arrests have been made. If you're out there listening and anybody has info, please pass it on to the Northern Territory Police. 131 444 is the number.
Katie, the speaking with people who know about these things, this is about 30 or 40 families, apparently, across Darwin. Now, what Jared said about McMinns Lagoon, in the last 2 weeks, down Bees Creek Road, down Whitstone, down Acacia Way, they, during the night time, 1 to 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, every house along that road, they attempted to get into the house, get in the cars. One woman, Bees Creek Road, close up to the school. There were tools and knife found on the driveway. They were picked. Some people were picked up on CCTV footage. They've all gone down Lowther Road as well, where Leo Bandius lives. He's got different people living there. And the lady had her purse taken, had money taken. And they're just looking for those quick money things. But this is the rural area. So something's twigged out there in that horrible world of crime. Let's go out there, because a lot of them don't have front gates. A lot of them don't lock it. As we know, a lot of rural people don't lock their cars. They leave keys in them, and they leave wallets because they're trusting. But that's going to change. Now, this is Bees Creek. Yeah.
And what really concerns me is that their arm. One of my constituents sent me a photo of a knife in a bag, a stainless steel sharp knife. So these ewes, as you can assume, are armed. So if you confront them, who knows what's going to happen? So it just shows that crime's out of control.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
You are listening to The Week That Was, and this morning we are inside the Mitchell Centre, just outside of Coles. We're here for the Food Bank Christmas Hamper Appeal. It's on again, and we're calling on the local community to support Territorians in need throughout the month of November. Come down, you can make a donation of food. Non-perishable items is what they're after. We're going to be here until midday today. But let's head down to Catherine to just have a quick chat about the situation where we did see throughout the week Catherine's only GP clinic is going to close, and the town is going to have to contend with a gap in that primary health care. We do know that the community is obviously quite concerned about the situation. I think that we had the situation throughout the week as well where obviously the opposition but also the community were saying we just need a stopgap, we just need something to tide us over at this point in time. And that does seem like it, you know, like it is definitely required. I mean, I think to myself the number of times I've taken the kids to the doctor, you know, because you're actually just a bit unsure of whether they're really sick or whether there's something wrong with them or whether you do need to see a doctor or what you need to do. And I'm sure there'd be, you know, plenty of people. It doesn't matter what your ailment is. If you need to see a doctor, you need to see a doctor.
Well, it's going to, if there's no private medical surgeries down there, then they're going to go to the hospital.
Yeah, and so the CLP asked that question in Parliament last week, and the Labor said they're going to have an interim plan, and it's shut and there's nothing happened. So it seems to be that interim plan didn't exist, or maybe just some words, but it's shut, and now there's 8,000 people in Catherine who don't have a private doctor to go to, and it's going to overload the hospital, or they've got to drive all the way to town. And like I said, if you've got a sick child, the last thing you want to do is a three-hour drive.
No, they'll go to the hospital. So I hope part of the plan that's going to be implemented.
That's the problem. What is the plan?
But you know, Jared, you know, you've got Senator Sam McMahon, who is from Catherine, so she should be working hard with her federal counterparts who are responsible for the that hospital network to make sure that there are. But you know, this is an issue. This is an indication of a much bigger issue. This is the under the iceberg stuff. Australians need to go to regional centres. We see too many Australians, whether it's teachers, even now police, who don't want to go bush. And I don't consider Catherine bush, by the way.
No.
I think of it as a regional town. But that's one of the issues Australians now aren't doing. And so one of the things that when I was education minister we worked on was about paying off HECS so that the teacher from down south who goes to a remote community, works as a teacher for 4 years, can have their HECS fees paid by the federal government.
It's a good idea, so I reckon.
That was the Tony Abbott plan.
Oh,
yes.
I reckon it's fabulous.
Is it working? Yeah, yeah. Did a lot of people take that up?
I'm not education minister, but I do think that has been taken up and there's an interest around that. So we do need to come up with options. And as I said, it is concerning that Australians want to stay in Melbourne, doctors, and not willing to come to some of those regional centres, because that's the bottom line.
Highly enough of people living in regional Australia. Like, I just think it's so important. You see, you know, Matt, you and I have spoken about this so many times where in Northern Australia you think to yourself, why aren't people moving here? Why would you want to live in bloody Melbourne at the moment?
Well, I think that's changing too.
It's changing.
The coronavirus is changing.
We've gone off topic a bit. We're talking about these 8,000 people in Catherine who now don't have a doctor to go to. And the Labor government said they had an interim plan, and that plan hasn't been implemented.
So who is responsible for it, though? Is it a federal government? Is it the responsibility of the federal government, or is it the responsibility of the Northern Territory government?
Because last week in Parliament, they had an interim plan for it, because they knew it was closing, and they had an interim plan to fix it, and it's shut, and there's been no interim plan implemented, so I'm not sure what it is.
I definitely take that point on board, and I do think that we've got to make sure there's a plan, but I also take on board what Eva is saying, because we're talking about a private practice here. So we're talking about nobody wanting to move to the Northern Territory or nobody wanting to even go from Darwin to go and take that practice on.
So Jared's saying 8,000, but let's just have a look at the figures for a start. So there are Aboriginal health organisations, medical doctors working for the Aboriginal health organisation. So whether that's Sunrise, Catherine West, services for Aboriginal people in Catherine
as
well.
Why can't all the residents go to those people?
And I think there is some that, I think, I mean, I wouldn't be talking out of turn, but I think there are times where there are, you know, other people who access those services. But so, yes, it is one where we do need to see doctors. And it obviously, I think, would be a viable business. And that's the bottom line also, isn't it, about making sure if you're running a doctor's surgery that you're going to make money.
So what do you reckon? I mean, what can happen, though, in the interim? Because I suppose that's the big thing. We've got to make
open
sure that
doors.
There is somebody that's,
well,
you know...
Open those doors to the
open the doors of these existing medical facilities.
So that the hospital one is there. So the hospital is there, for which has doctors. So families, anybody who has an issue, needs to see a doctor, can go to the hospital. But as I said, we do need to see some... so whether it's... and I think actually, the interim one, and I'm trying to, I mean, you know, obviously I have a lot of information coming at different angles, but my understanding is that one of the medical services in, or one of the medical organisations in Palmerston is looking to set up in a Katherine.
Because I've got a message here from one of our listeners that says businesses can get workers' compensation certificates, but the Katherine Hospital won't issue return to work certificates. There are now no doctors to complete the return to work for insurance purposes. This is an Northern Territory government problem, not a federal government problem, says that texter. Look, I guess, you know, no matter what, from my perspective, I think you just can't have a situation where you've got a town with a lot of people living there.
And no private practice.
That's right.
And this hasn't come overnight. This has been happening.
Sorry,
the government know about it, and nothing's happened.
So, so as I said, I think this is one of the issues. Natasha's in Canberra at the moment. That's one of the issues. She's obviously talking to Minister Hunt around. But also, as I said, my understanding is that there are options for a private surgery that's in Palmerston to take up some interim work down there.
All right.
Part of the plan, I still think, should be that those existing medical services down there, as part of this plan, should open their doors to people who aren't Aboriginal people. I mean, they're doctors, you know, they're doctors, or clinicians, whichever they may be. They should be part of the plan, allowing someone to go there who just hasn't happened to be an Aboriginal person.
That seems a little bit of common sense, and it seems Labor don't have any common sense, because that would fix it easily.
I think one of the biggest picture solutions is also to make sure that we have more territory students, but more young people taking up medicine.
Agreed.
Because it is one of those professions where you do have to, as we know, get very high marks. Let's see more Australians become doctors so that we can have people from the regions.
Definitely long term, I reckon that's certainly something we need to look at. But I do take the point on board from both Jared and Kezia that we need to have a situation where I wonder whether the Indigenous Health Services can actually help out and have everybody going in there in the interim to ensure that we don't have a situation where there's, you know, nobody able to see a doctor.
Can see a doctor at the hospital. So let's be clear about that. They can see a doctor at the hospital.
You'd have to agree, though. Like, I know myself, if I... You know, if I need a new script, I'm not going to go to the... you're not going to go to the hospital for
a
while.
That's
right, yeah.
It's a bit excessive.
And it also, though, it's a huge strain then on the health... You know, on the hospital, I would suspect.
Agreed.
Yeah,
but
no,
I think, as Jared said, if the government said it had an interim plan, where is the plan?
So my understanding is that there is a plan being put in place, as I said, through a private provider, but also additional staff at the hospital. So, again, Jared, let's look at the positives. Let's look at what can be done always rather than continuing to run down the health professions and people who are absolutely working hard in regional centres. It isn't just an issue for the Territory. It's an issue whether you're in Wagga, whether you're in country Victoria, about having
about
doctors.
We are going to have to get ready to wrap up, unfortunately. We're done for the morning. We always run out of time. Before we wrap up, though, obviously we're here for Food Bank. They do a phenomenal job helping Territorians in need. And I think that now more than ever, particularly in this COVID year, we all understand that people are maybe going through a tougher patch at the moment, whether you're a Territorian, no matter where you're living. And what Food Bank do so beautifully, in my opinion, is give people a hand up when they need it. You know, you don't feel like you're a charity case coming and seeing the crew at Food Bank. They help everybody out when you need that hand, and it's such an important role that they play.
And I've been sitting here watching, and there's a purple bin here, and people have been going past and putting on and in it. So a big thank you to all those people that I've seen do it. So good on you.
Absolutely.
And Katie, can I just put a plug in for, it's World Teachers Day, so to all the rural teachers out there, because it's been a tough year for teachers more than normal, And not only teachers in our primary schools, but also early childhood professionals at, you know, the daycare centre. Yeah, so happy World Teachers Day to you all out there.
Yes. Yep, for sure.
Yeah, and I'll reiterate that too. So all the best to all our teachers who do an amazing job every day.
Well, what a morning. Matt Cunningham, Jared Maley, Eva Lawler and Kezia Purick.
Thanks,
thank
Katie.
You all so much for your time today.
Thanks, Katie.
You are listening to Mix 104.9's 360.